Okay, we are on the air. All right, so let's get to work over here. We'll discuss some shayla that are sent in. We'll start with the shayla that Aaron sent in just a few hours ago, which is if you're in the middle of a meal and you're not thirsty because of the meal, you're thirsty before the meal, or you're just drinking but not connected to the meal at all, the bread didn't make you thirsty. So there is a big debate in halacha if you have to make a shahakol in a drink that you drink in the middle of the meal. There is a debate. However, the minhag ha'olam is we don't make any brachas on drinks during a meal except for wine. If you have wine in the middle of the meal, then you make hagafen. But any other drink in the middle of the meal, even if you're not thirsty because of the meal, the minhag is we do not make any brachas. Okay, but Aaron's a very good shayla. There's a big debate about it. But at the end of the day, we do not make any of those brachas. Okay, the second shayla sent in is rollerblading on Shabbos. Are you allowed to rollerblade on Shabbos? So if you are a child, then yes. Meaning if you feel that you need to and you're over bar mitzvah, well, then you shouldn't try to find some other hobby on Shabbos. But under bar mitzvah, as long as there is no grass that you'll be ripping up as you rollerblade, so then the Shlomo Zalman compares it to a tricycle. To ride a real bike, you shouldn't do. To ride a tricycle, you can. And therefore, rollerblades are somewhat similar to a tricycle, if Shlomo Zalman compares them to. And therefore, that would be okay. As far as, another interesting shayla that sent in is, this probably doesn't happen to most people, but can you daven Maariv after Amud HaShachar? So, you know, you're up all night learning and you really didn't daven Maariv yet. It's almost, and it is Amud HaShachar. So for sure, don't do Lechachila. For sure, you should have daven beforehand. But let's say it was a freak occurrence. So then you can say Shema. You can say Berachas Kriya Shema. You cannot say Hashtivenu. And it's a Machlokas if you're allowed to daven Shemon Esrei. So we're talking now in the period between Amud HaShachar and Netzach Hama, which is about 72-90 minute window before sunrise. In that window, if somehow you realize you didn't daven Maariv, yes Shema, yes Berachas Kriya Shema, no Hashkivenu, and a Machlokas about Shemon Esrei, you can be lenient and daven Shemon Esrei, the Aruch HaShulchan, possibly like that. Another shayla that was sent in was eating before Mincha. So if you, right, you didn't daven Mincha yet and you're hungry, so definitely you're allowed to snack. Snacks are no problem. When it comes to having a washing, having real meal, so then if you have a minyan kavua, you always daven at 7 o'clock, then it's no problem. If you don't have a minyan kavua, so then you need to set an alarm or have someone who already davened remind you to daven. So your phone can do that. You just set the alarm and then you can have a meal before davening mincha. Another shayla was sent in, this is a very controversial one, which is brachas on wraps and brachas on pizza. Very big debate. You have every shita possible. One shita holding you have to wash even if you have a small bite. Other shita say that no, only if you've had 2 to 3 pieces of pizza. The minhag ha'olam, from what I understand, from what my rabbi told me, is if you have 2 slices of pizza, then you wash and bench. If you're having less than 2 slices of pizza, you do not. You do mezainis and ala mechia. If you thought you were going to have less than 2, and then in the middle you change your mind, so you don't make a new bracha, but you would have to bench after you had the 2+. Wraps, also big machlokas, where that fits in. I was told you make a mezainis, but they're also best probably would be to wash on bread, but definitely a fight. But if you don't have bread around, you can make a mezainis. So Rafael, on wraps, which is a big machlokas, you can be mekel and make a mezainis. If you have a lot of that also, that may warrant a bracha, that may warrant benching. And it's a shayla if the tuna inside the wrap joins into the shear. A big fight, the best would be to wash on wraps and pizza on a piece of bread. But if that's not relevant, that's not available, that's too hard, you can make a mezainis and have a not large amount. And then the last shayla, very geshmak shayla, is can you take a sushi and a wrap? I don't really know. I'm not familiar. I don't know what bracha to make on sushi. a big shayla. My understanding was that the rice is the ikker. If I'm wrong, then I don't know. If the rice is the ikker, then you make a mezainis. If the vegetables, the meat, and fish inside is the ikker, then you would make whatever the ikker would be. But I personally make three separate brachas on three separate things. I'll take a cracker, I'll take a cucumber, and I'll take a drink of water or a piece of fish outside of it. But definitely being machalikas on wraps and on sushi. And the last shayla sent in was can you take meiser money from money that you're giving, right? You want to give meiser of your money, of your parnasa. Can you use that money for an aliyah that you bought in shul, right? So there was an auction in shul, and you went ahead and bought that aliyah for $100. Can you take that $100 and use that towards your meiser money that you give? So assuming that the money is not going to the gabbai personally, it's going to the shul, going to the yeshiva. So the money is ending up in a good place. We're going to call it, it's ending up in a place that you can generally give your meiser money to. Fine. The question is that you got something from this aliyah. You got something from the money. You got the aliyah. Does that count? Like, for tax deductible, did you receive services and goods for this money? So it's a nice shayla. I saw it discussed, and I saw what they said was like this. If the guy before you auctioned and wanted to pay $50, and then you said $100, so you can take $50 off of meiser, because the shul, the yeshiva, was going to get $50 with or without you. The only thing you ended up giving to the yeshiva or the shul more was the added $50. And therefore they said the only money you take off of meiser was the money that you outbid the previous bidder. So if it was no previous bidder, let's just say you cornered the market, you right up there, got up there $100, and that silenced everybody. So maybe you could take off $99, because maybe there would have to be $1, maybe the minimum. But whatever is above the minimum, that is, whatever is above the minimum is what you could take off from my somebody. Okay, so these were six random shaylas. Get a shomer if you want to eat before mincha. Try to dive before I move to Shachar Marv. If you didn't, it's okay. You can dive in Shmon Esrei. Meiser for Aliyah, whatever you outbid the other guy. And what's it called? And as far as outbid the other guy, yes, Nachum, that is true. As far as rollerblading on Shabbos, if you're under Bar Mitzvah and not on grass, you can rollerblade on Shabbos. Pizza and wraps, big machlokas, you can do mezainis, but don't eat too much of it. And the last shot that we discussed was that, drinking in the middle of meal. No brachas on drinking in the middle of meal, except for wine. You make hagafen on. Okay, so now let's get to halachas of the 9 days. So last week we did halachas of 3 weeks. There is some overlap. It's all in the same simen, which is a tough kuf nun aleph. The halachas of the 9 days. A lot of the halachas are different whether you are Svardi or whether you are Ashkenazi. So to the best of my knowledge, only Tuvia is perhaps Svardi in our group tonight. I'll try to point out the differences. Just a general theme is, right, as we understand halacha, Hashem is not oppressive. The Rabbanan are not oppressive. They're not trying to hurt us. There is a reason behind all these halachas. The general reason is it's a bad time in Klal Yisrael. We've suffered a lot. And more relevant is that it's a time of avelus, time of mourning. And as we see, it gets heightened. The mourning gets heightened, right? From the 3 weeks to the 9 days to the week of Tisha B'Av to Tisha B'Av until Chatzos. These are like the climax. Tisha B'Av until Chatzos is the climax of the mourning period. So this is the lumdis behind what is going on behind all these halachas. We're trying to understand and trying to feel that we're missing Beis HaMikdash, and therefore doing these things, same way if a person lost a father, mother, brother, sister, would have to do some avelus. These are very similar halachas. They overlap a lot. Okay, so just we'll start with a few different points. One is most of these yisurim start from Shkia of Rosh Chodesh. Now, Rosh Chodesh this year, I believe, is Wednesday. So Tuesday night at Shkia is when these halachas, that's when the 9 days start. Like, probably, if you need to be lenient until Tzeis HaChacham, you could. But the bottom line is that from Shkia of Tuesday night is when the 9 days start and when these halachas apply. So for this, and my other Sephardi who just joined in, so most of these halachas will overlap, Sephardi, Ashkenazi, I'll try and point out the difference. Okay, so now, it's come Shkia, it's now Tuesday night, it is now the 9 days. You should start being sad. Halacha is to have less simcha. So you don't have to walk around with a frown on your face, but have less simcha. You try to avoid elective surgeries. You try not to go to court with Goyim. If you need a surgery, then you go. But if it's an elective surgery, then you try to avoid it. You should not do building or purchasing of things that bring tremendous simcha. Okay, so anything which brings tremendous simcha, like buying an apartment, perhaps buying furniture. If you need it, you don't have a chair to sit on, no problem, buy the chair. If you don't have a washing machine to wash, well, we'll get to washing soon. But if there are certain things, that you need, you can't be without, so then you can buy them. We're talking about buying things which are for simcha, an added simcha, not just necessity, but an added simcha. So those are things you should not be buying. Let's say you want to do renovations in your house. Try to do them after Tisha B'Av. Renovations in your house should be done after Tisha B'Av. All right, Shui, we're starting the 90s halachas right now. So no building, no extra simcha. Only what's needed, what's required. If you want to get engaged, all my holy bachim that are here, you can get engaged. If you want to get married, push it off till after Tisha B'Av. If you want to have an engagement party, you can have it, but no dancing and no music. So it'll be kind of, a little bit down. But you are allowed to get engaged. You are not allowed to get married. You could have a cappella music at your engagement party if you like, but no dancing to it. Fine. And those are the lighter Isurim. Now let's get to the heavy duty Isurim of the 9 days are washing clothing, washing your body, eating meat and milk. And here we have differences between Sfardi and Ashkenazi. Okay, so primarily for the Sfardim, these Isurim start only the week of Tisha B'Av, which would mean Matzi Shabbos of Shabbos Chazon, which would be in a week from this Matzi Shabbos. Whereas all for the Ashkenazim, all of these Isurim start already from this Tuesday night, Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so let's talk about washing clothing. So there is an Isser to wash. There is an Isser to iron. There's an Isser to have laundered by the Chinaman down the block. All of these things are Isser to do on the 9 days. Let's say you have a stain. If the stain will be able to come out in a week's time, then fine. You cannot get the stain out. If you don't get it out now, it will never come out. So that's a Hefsid. You are allowed to get the stain out. So now, when we say you can't do laundry, what does that mean? I need to wear the same dirty, ugly shirt? Answer is no. If you have another shirt, put it on. However, not so simple. Can you put on freshly laundered clothing? I laundered them before the 9 days. Can I put on freshly laundered? The answer is no, I cannot. So not only can you not wash and launder, but you are also not allowed to put on freshly laundered clothing. So now, what am I going to do now? I have 10 clean shirts. I'm wearing one. It's already the second day, the second hour. It's getting dirty. So I can't wash this shirt and I can't put on a laundered shirt. Okay, I'll go buy a new shirt. No, you can't buy a new shirt either. So now you're really stuck. You can't buy a new shirt. You can't wash the shirt you're wearing. You can't launder and you can't wear your laundered shirt. So what do you do now? You go naked. No, that what you do now is you have multiple choices. The best would be take one of the shirts that you had already laundered before the 9 days and wear it. However, best would be to take off the fresh look. Now, there are two ways to take off the fresh look from laundered clothing. One of them would be, and the ideal, is to wear multiple shirts before the 9 days start. So between now and Tuesday night, for an hour, a half hour, go put on all your shirts that you may end up needing during the 9 days. Wear them for a half hour. That will take off the freshly laundered look from these shirts. And therefore, when during the 9 days you need them, you can put them on because it's no longer freshly laundered. If you are not so forward thinking and you didn't do that, the other idea is you can roll it up a little bit, shake it a little bit. Some people have the minute to put on the floor and jump on it. You can do multiple, be creative. But the idea is to take off the freshly laundered look from this clothing. Now, let's say you're done. All your laundered clothing are no longer laundered, and you have no clothing that's clean. You do not need to go out with dirty clothing. You can wash, but you're only allowed to wash exactly what you need, which means, let's say, 3 days left. All you need is two more shirts. You're allowed to wash two shirts. You're not allowed to wash 10 shirts. Even though it's one washing machine, I'm just putting it in, let me wash everything. No, you're only allowed to wash exactly what you will be needing for the 9 days. Now, let's say, is there a difference between buying or laundering? The answer is no. If, for whatever reason, you don't want to do laundry and you would rather buy a shirt. So even though we said don't buy new stuff, that's true, but you don't have a shirt. You need to buy a new shirt. You can buy a new shirt or launder. It's the same thing. Okay, so the theme is do not be putting on or buying freshly laundered things, but do not look like a shmata. Do not embarrass yourself or the people you belong to. And therefore, you go ahead and take the freshness off. As far as the Kavod Shabbos goes, it is a machlokes, but we hold you are allowed to put on new, freshly laundered clothing for Shabbos. However, it shouldn't be new. I mean, you shouldn't buy new. It shouldn't be the first time you're wearing it ever. You can wear laundered clothing, but best not to wear new stuff for Shabbos. And you don't need to put it on 1 second before Shabbos. You can put it on when you would normally get dressed for Shabbos after your shower of Shabbos. You can go ahead and put on your freshly laundered clothing. You're allowed to polish your shoes for Shabbos if you would like to. And that is a general look at buying. If you want to buy tzitzis, if you want to buy svarim, no problem. But if you want to buy things that bring simcha, that's a problem. And therefore, you should not do that. If you're making a bris, call me up. We'll talk about it. There's a lot of heterim if you're making a bris. Fine. That is as far as washing and laundering and buying. Two more things we want to talk about, which is washing your body. Rechitza. Are you allowed to be clean? Do you have to smell during the 9 days? The answer is you do not need to smell. However, you're not allowed to wash yourself in a way that will bring you simcha, or the lashon that's being used is tanug. Nothing for tanug. We use the word einik Shabbos, enhancement, enjoyment of Shabbos. No showering for your enjoyment, for your enhancement. So here's the way this goes. If you smell, you need to shower. If you have skin issues, if you have things which need attending to in the shower, attend to them. However, when you're showering, it must be the minimum possible, minimum in time and minimum in temperature. You should not be having a hot, geschmack, 10-minute shower. You should be having a lukewarm 2-minute shower. You should be getting in and getting out. You should be doing it as quick as possible. And don't be in pain, but the temperature of the water should be the minimum, the coldest that you could handle. Now, you don't need to be part of the polar bear club and take a very freezing cold shower. You can take a lukewarm shower, whatever you can handle, but not more than that. Your theme when you're in there is, I'm in here to get out. I'm in here to not embarrass myself or make it difficult for people around me. And that's why I'm here. I'm getting in and getting out. Erev Shabbos is a little bit more of a kula. You can like up the temperature a little bit. Also machlokes, but if you want to make your Erev Shabbos shower a tad bit more enjoyable, it's okay. But again, not a 10-minute singing in the shower with hot water. Get in, get out, and that's as far as washing. It's for children under 3, you don't need to be machmer at all. Above 3, also you should do the similar ideas for children above 3. They probably will not complain. That is as far as washing. As far as cutting your fingernails and toenails, also machokas, we're lenient to cut up until Shavua Shechobo, up until the week of Tisha B'Av. And that is as far as washing. Okay, now as far as the other issur of meat and wine. Okay, so starting from Rosh Chodesh for Ashkenazim, or from Shavua Shechobo for Svardim, there is an issur to have meat and wine. Now, you are allowed to have beer. You are allowed to have whiskey. You are not allowed to have wine. You're not allowed to have grape juice. You're not allowed to take wine and pour water into it. The wine family is usser. The schnapps beer family is mutter. As far as meat, chicken, it's all the same. You're not allowed to do it. Even chicken soup, that there's no pieces of meat. It's just a flavor of meat is also usser. As long as there's a flavor of meat, which means it's not 1 to 60. It is aser to have that mixture. So if by accident you cook something in wine, or you by accident threw some chicken fat into something, if it is the ratio of 1 to 60, it's fine. But if it's less than that, or more meat or wine than 160, it is a problem. You are allowed to use fleishik kalim, the fleishik dishes you are allowed to use, and as long as they are clean and you're not getting the fleishik flavor. Fine, that's that. As far as, yeah, that should be that. Anything else? Right, even on Rosh Chodesh, fish is fine. One second, fish is no problem. You can have as much fish as you want, and that will be a good source of protein. There is no heter just because it's Rosh Chodesh or just because it's a Malava Malka. It is discussed, but Lamaisa, we do not pass like that. If you are sick and you need the extra protein, or you are a lady who just had a baby within 30 days, a lot more kulas, if you need to eat them, you need to eat meat, you could. And the last shaila here is as far as Havdalah. Havdalah is a big shaila. What should you make Havdalah on? So if your minhag is to make on coffee or beer, fine, no problem. But in general, it's preferred to make, if you can, prefer to make it on wine. Even this month of Shabbos and next month of Shabbos, prefer to make it on wine. So if you have a katan somewhere between the age of 6 and 9, he can drink it, fine. Otherwise, you could drink it, you could drink the wine. But again, you don't need to drink 18 cups of it. Drink what's needed for the shear, and you don't need to add more than that. That is the halachas of meat and wine. And the last thing is kish levana. There are different machlokes in them, different minhagim, when to say kish levana. The minhag is not to do it before Tisha B'Av. The minhag is to do it after Tisha B'Av. After you put your shoes on and eat something, you can go do kish levana. But again, the different minhagim in that. Okay, that is a wrap on the halachas of the 9 days. Next week we'll do the halachas of Tisha B'Av itself. So it's broken into three different shiurim, three different segments in halacha: 3 weeks, 9 days, and then Tisha B'Av. Okay, now starting on the parsha. This week's parsha is a double parsha for everybody. So we'll start Parshas Matos. It's very interesting that the Hashem was sending Klal Yisrael out to a war against Midian, and this was going to be the last war of Moshe Rabbeinu, because right after this war, they're going to go into Eretz Yisrael, and Moshe was going to die. And it's interesting, there's an expression which I heard, that a rav of a shul, if the congregants don't want to throw him out, he's not a rav, and if the congregants throw him out, that means he's not a mensch, which means he's got to be walking a fine line. Why? He's got to be there to, you know, help and instruct and improve the congregants, but he's got to do it in a nice way that it can be palatable. I thought of a raya for that concept from over here. Rashi brings down Pasuk Dalet, Perek Lamana Pasuk Dalet, how Moshe Rabbeinu, while Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, Bnei Yisrael went to kill him. There's a Pasuk that says, Od Ma Uskuluni. Moshe Rabbeinu thought they're going to come kill me, and they complained and they kvetched, and they always knew they would go ahead and complain and kvetch to Moshe Rabbeinu. So you would think they hate him, they wanted to get rid of him. However, now comes time for war. Klal Yisrael knew this was the last war, and then Moshe Rabbeinu was going to die. They did not want to go to war. Moshe Rabbeinu had to force them to go to war because they didn't want to go to war because they didn't want him to die. So here you have this little tug of war over here, how they love the love-hate relationship. They love Moshe and they hated Moshe. They wanted him to be the leader and they wanted to complain against him. And this is the concept. That's the perfect leader. They love you, but they hate you. And that's kind of what Moshe Rabbeinu was to Klal Yisrael, and perhaps what your Rav should be as well. Another interesting thing over here is at the end of the parsha, we have B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven. Sheva Gad, Sheva Reuven. And they were very rich. The Pasuk says they had a lot of cattle. They did not want to go into Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to stay Be'ever HaYarding. So there's a whole dialogue between Moshe Rabbeinu and B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven. And they cut a deal. Fine, they made a deal. We'll go to war. We'll come back. Fine. What's interesting is the whole dialogue was between Gad and Reuven, but not Chatzi Sheva Menashe, not half of the tribe of Menashe. Yet, right at the end of the parsha, it says that Moshe is giving B'nai Gad, B'nai Reuven, and Chatzi Sheva Menashe, Be'er HaYarden. Where did they come from? They never requested it. They weren't in the dialogue. I don't know if they were even in the deal of go to war and then come back. And all of a sudden, Moshe is saying, I'm giving Chatzi Sheva Menashe also land Be'er HaYarden. What's going on over there? The Ramban says because the land was so large, Gad and Reuben weren't big enough to inhabit it, so they wanted to put another tribe there to help the inhabitation, which is good. We could add on to that a few other pshatim. Why Chatzis Shevet Menashe? Why them? Why not a whole tribe? Why not some other tribe? So that good pshatim given, one of them is Moshe Rabbeinu wanted Menashe because they lived in Galus. They had the in their blood, they grew up in Galus, so they would be able to keep from even in Galus. And Daka Chatzi, because when it's a half, that would create an automatic bond to the other parts of Klal Yisrael. Be'er HaYarden. So we wanted half here, half there to connect God, Reuven, and half Menashe, that they should feel part of Klal Yisrael, a connection to Klal Yisrael. So there was a need for, like the Ramban says, to inhabit the land. Davka Menashe, because they had the ability to be strong and stay from in Galus. And Davka Chatzi, so that there would be this link, this bond between that part of Klal Yisrael and the other part of Klal Yisrael. We find similar there, b'chatzi shekel. We give a chatzi shekel. Why not a whole shekel? To understand that we're part of a whole. We're not a whole. We're part of. And therefore, we are connected to Klal Yisrael, and these tribes over here are also connected to the rest of Klal Yisrael. And last thing, Parshas Masai, it's very interesting. We go through all the travels that Klal Yisrael had, and it may get a little bit boring, right? It goes through all the 38 travels, I believe, that they had. Every place where they camped, they stopped, they traveled. What's interesting is along the way, it says, and over here they didn't have water, and over here they complained. And it gives you like a few ideas of what happened in each place. What's fascinating is, if you go ahead, I'll ask you and answer to yourselves, what was the biggest occurrence, the most unbelievable event that happened in the Midbar? Right, think back. So you have the miraculum, you have the water, you have the complaining, you have the hitting the rock. There are a lot of different events that happened in the Midbar. But if you had to pull out like, the most singular, remarkable event that happened in the Midbar, I'm hoping we all would say Har Sinai and Matan Torah, because that is what happened in the Midbar. And one of the travels was Sinai. But yet, when you look at the Psukim, it says they traveled to Sinai, they camped in Sinai, and they went to the next place. It does not mention Matan Torah. It mentions other events that happened. Yet the most unique, remarkable event that happened in the Midbar, the Torah did not mention. Why would that be? So I heard a great shot that we're not supposed to look at Matan Torah as an event. It wasn't like, whoa, July 4th fireworks. Unbelievable. It wasn't, wow, the World Series. It wasn't, whoa, CMA shots. It wasn't an event. It was a life changer. We're with it every day. We say, mitzavcha hayoyim, in present tense. It's not what we live with. It's not a historical, okay, take your history book. Okay, in the year, boom, 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 that's what this happened. It wasn't an event. It was a life changer. It changed our lives. It's not what we live with every day. So there's no need to say, oh, it happened in Har Sinai. Another example, we don't daven towards Har Sinai, right? When we daven Shon Esrei, we daven towards Yerushalayim, Beis HaMikdash. We don't treat Har Sinai as a Makom Kadosh, right? I all the trips and the tour leaders, if they come back eventually, right? They make all the trips to Mekomot HaKadoshim. I've yet to hear of a trip to Sinai. Perhaps, maybe there is. I mean, I missed it. But we don't treat Sinai, Har Sinai, Midbar Sinai as a Makom Chashu because it wasn't a place of an event. It's something which would change our lives forever and something which we live with today, wherever we are, wherever you are. That is your Har Sinai. That's your Kabbalah Satara every day. Have a wonderful night. A wonderful Shabbos. And may Hashem see you next week, same time. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. Good night.
Good night, guys.